You're listening to the OCD Stories podcast, hosted by me, Stuart Ralph. The OCD Stories is a podcast dedicated to raising awareness and understanding around obsessive compulsive symptoms. I do this through interviewing inspired therapists, psychologists, and people who have experienced OCD. Welcome to the OCD Stories. And welcome to episode 336. And in this one, I got back on multiple time guest Lily Bailey. Lily Bailey is an author, and she has previously written Because We Are Bad, and she's been on the show before years ago to talk about that. And she's recently written a fiction book called When I See Blue. And in it, we talk about her new book, When I See Blue, and what it's about, and the main characters. She reads us a section from chapter one, how the main character was inspired by some of Lily's story, the themes of OCD the character Ben experiences, why Lily wrote more backstory for Ben, including other struggles than just OCD. We discuss trauma and OCD, what she hopes readers will get from When I See Blue, and much more. I really enjoyed this conversation with Lily. As always, it's always a pleasure to speak with her, and I'm grateful that she was able to do a reading. I think that's a nice touch for the podcast, and I think you'll enjoy this one. And thank you to NoCD for supporting the podcast. NoCD offers affordable, effective, and convenient therapy available in the US and outside the US. To find out more about NoCD, their therapy plans, if they currently take your insurance, or to download their free app, head over to go.treatmyocd.com/theocdstories, or the link will be in the episode description. And thank you as always to you guys for listening. I deeply appreciate it. And without further ado, here is Lily.
Welcome back to the show, Lily.
Thank you for having me back. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, it's good to have you back. And as we were just discussing, it's not actually that long ago that you were on it, because we did the panel episode, which was sort of 5 weeks ago at this point. But yeah, obviously, anyone's interested, I've done two sort of more story-based episodes, and about your first book, Because We Are Bad. I'll link that in the show notes. And we did a live one at the ICF conference in Austin before the world went a bit mad. So first question is, how have you been?
I have been good. I feel like it's funny because I just saw you a few weeks ago and everyone is going to be like, oh, she's back on the podcast. Yeah, I can't get enough of this podcast. I have been good. When I See Blue came out a few weeks ago, so that's been really exciting. I've been going to lots of bookshops and living my best life.
Yeah.
And I also got married, which, you know, I tell your listeners, my now husband and I eloped to New York, and yeah, we got married in the City Hall. So that was a thing.
Wow. And is that, this is my ignorance, does that legally still apply to this country?
Because we had to check as well. Okay. It's legally binding here.
Okay. Good to know. All right. Well, that sounds awesome. And then do you stay in New York for a bit?
We actually were going to New York to visit some friends, and we've been engaged for a while and planning on getting married. And then my husband was like, which he wasn't my husband then, obviously, he was like, maybe we should just get married in New York. It's really easy. Like, you pay like $35 for a marriage license, and then you can get married for another $25 the next day. And I was like, yeah, whatever. Like, that's not going to happen. But then he was like, shall I bring my suit? And I was like, oh, okay. And then it actually all fell into place, and I ordered a dress, next day delivery on ASOS, and we got married.
Wow, that's awesome. And I think that's cheaper than the UK, I think, for marriage licenses.
Yeah, it is, I think. Yeah. Just the whole thing, I think, was cheaper than if we had done literally anything else.
True. Well, congrats on that. So two big things happening right now for you. So, yeah, you mentioned, we're going to get into When I See Blue in a second. But, yeah, you mentioned there about, and I saw actually on your Instagram a picture of you in a bookstore with a pile of your books, and there were some balloons there, I think. So were you doing like a book signing?
Yeah, I've been sort of going from bookshop I've been going around bookshops signing copies of books, and then they have them, and if people want to come in and get them, they can. And nice. Meeting booksellers, which is really nice to meet the people who are actually sort of pitching your book to the kids.
Yeah, true. Wow. And then was that, so you of course have written Because We Are Bad, which is it completely autobiographical?
Yeah,
it was, wasn't it? What's the difference in terms of, like, did you do book signings then, or has it been more this time?
I mean, it is different because We're Bad was obviously for adults. And so but then again, actually, when Because We Are Bad came out, Because We Are Bad had quite a small release, and it was published with a quite a small nonfiction publisher, and so I didn't do signings then. But then it actually had the American rights sold, which was really exciting. And then we did a bigger paperback release here. And then there were signings, because there was where I did some events. And as you know, I came to the International OCD Foundation conference to sign books, which was really fun. There were probably more signings for that the second time it came out, I would say.
Okay, cool. And obviously you're with Hatchet now, which is a bigger publisher. So they'll probably put more clout behind the launch.
Yeah, they're a really lovely publisher, and I feel really lucky to be with them, and they've been really great. And yeah, when the book came out, they took me round and took me out for lunch. It was lovely.
That's awesome.
I mean, round the bookshops, I mean, like, not all just right, yeah. round town.
Tell us about When I See Blue.
So When I See Blue is about a boy called Ben, and he is 12 years old, and he has just started a new school. His family have moved from Essex to London. And basically at his old school, he used to be a bit of a misfit. And that was primarily because of his OCD, although he doesn't actually know he has OCD at this point. But as many people who grew up with OCD well, no, it can lead you to do some strange behaviours, and these kind of behaviours and compulsions that appear strange to others. And so he's sort of ostracised, and he's like the weird kid in school, and he's teased a bit. Anyway, he comes to London. He's like, right, I'm just not going to do that anymore. I'm going to reinvent myself. And again, as anyone with OCD will know, it's not as simple as just being like, right, I'm not going to do my compulsions. Mm-hmm. But he meets a new friend at the new school, and it's called April, and she's kind of like the first proper friend he's ever actually had. And with her help, along with his teacher, who's really supportive, and mainly just his own drive to like work out what is going on, he does finally meet a therapist who's able to help him, and he really starts to challenge what's been going on in his head. And yeah, it's when I wrote Because We Are Bad, I would have adults being like, when are you doing something that my child with OCD can read, or that this young person I know who has OCD can read? And I felt like it was really important, because when I was younger, I would have really liked something like that to have read, and I never saw characters with OCD in kids' books, and it kind of feeds into that thing of them not knowing what you're living with. Mm. So yeah, it's kind of like the book I feel like I needed when I was younger.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was going to be one of my questions, like, why write it? You've kind of answered that there.
Oh, sorry. Which is,
no, it's fine. It's just to highlight that that's a great reason and motivation to do it. Well, one, it's great that the demand's there, that people are asking for it. But two, it's what you would have wanted, you know? So in some way you kind of right the wrongs of there being nothing when you were a teen.
Yeah, definitely.
So Lily, if you want, it'd be great for you to read a bit of the book, just to give people a taste of what it's about before I kind of ask some more questions.
Great. Okay. So this is chapter one. Hilltown Secondary School looks so unlike a school that I don't even realise it is a school until Mum says, here we are. It's just through those red doors, I think. My old school was built in the Victorian times, so it was all bricks, points, and long arched windows. It even had a separate entrance that said boys and girls, from a time when it wasn't okay for us to use the same door. This school looks like it could be a block of flats. A group of kids walk by, heading for the red doors. They're all talking over each other, loud and fast. Hey, says Mum, those might be your new friends. Why don't you go and talk to them? I look at her like she suggested I paint my body with blood and go and swim with some sharks, and I wonder if it's true what my older brother Kyle says. Mum is completely nuts. Every single one of these kids has a backpack glinting with keyrings. My backpack doesn't have any. It's a TARDIS blue backpack, the only okay type of blue. TARDIS stands for Time and Relative Dimensions in Space, and it's the spaceship that the Doctor travels in through time and space. The Doctor is the main character in my favourite ever, ever TV show, Doctor Who. The Doctor looks like a regular human, but really he's a Time Lord, which means he's from another planet, has two hearts, and can live for hundreds and hundreds of years. The Doctor travels around in his TARDIS, solving problems all over the galaxy. He's always fighting monsters and stopping wars and saving the world just in time. The Doctor would be seriously peeved if you try to decorate his TARDIS, so I keep my TARDIS backpack neat and keyring free. You'll be fine, says Mum, interrupting my thoughts. Go on, off you go. I tap my feet on the floor four times because four is my special number and it keeps me safe. There are four people in my family and I'm born in August. The bad thing about being born in August is that you're nearly always the youngest in your year and everyone treats you like a baby. But the excellent thing about it is that August is the eighth month and I was born on the second. If you divide eight for the month by two for the date, you get four again, which must be a sign it's a special number for me. When I see the number four in my head, I see myself sitting in the triangle that the left side of the four makes, with my knees bunched up to my chest and the line above my head making a nice slanty roof. I can't remember exactly when I knew four was my number. It feels like maybe I always knew. I do remember that when I used to walk in fours, Mum and Dad would pick me up and carry me because it was easier than waiting for me to get somewhere. Then I used to scream and scream because they didn't understand that I had to do it to keep us safe. They stopped picking me up eventually. Maybe it was because of the screaming, or maybe I just got too big. One of the most difficult things about doing things in fours is walking. I count my steps in fours, and I like that each step is the same size. Sometimes I'm not sure that the steps are the same size, or something about them just feels wrong, and then I have to go back and do the steps again. When I'm walking down the road, I like the fact that cars have four wheels, but if I see a bicycle, motorbike, or one of those long lorries with six wheels, then I have to count four cars to make things feel okay. If that doesn't make it feel okay, then I times that by four and count 16 cars. And if that doesn't work, then I times 16 by four and count 64 cars. And if that still doesn't work, then I times 64 by four and count 256 cars. Sometimes it can be pretty hard to find 256 cars in Essex. So I guess that's a good thing about moving to London, even if there are lots of scary things too, like going to a new school and not knowing where anything is. I feel Mum's arms reaching out to hug me goodbye, but I don't want her to hug me in case the other kids see and think I'm a baby. So, still facing away from her and towards the door, I say, under my breath, "Can you say the magic words, please?" The quick brown fox jumps over the lazy dog, Mum whispers, which is a pangram. That's a sentence that contains every single letter of the alphabet, which means it sort of contains every good thing in the world that you could possibly need to bring you luck. I ask her to do it three more times to make four, and she does. Then she squeezes my shoulders and says, "Off you go, Benny. I love you. You'll be fine." I head through the red doors, knowing that red is the colour of anger and that every day when I walk into school, I will now wonder whether I'm causing Mum and Dad to have another argument with each other. Because it's the first day, there are paper signs on the walls with arrows telling you which way to go. Mum told me that I'm in class 8A, so I follow the signs to the fourth floor, good sign, head into a room that is not a square and has six corners, bad sign. A man at the front of the room with a paper register tells me that his name is Mr. Montague and he's teaching this class. "Find a desk, any desk you like," he grins, as if the fact that there's no assigned seating is a good thing. If you're an unpopular person, this is basically the apocalypse. There's an unoccupied twin desk by the front window and I scoot over there. The other kids are sitting on each other's desks and swinging their legs, talking about what they did during the summer holidays and messing around. I stare down at my desk and count its four corners with my eyes. I've decided that at this school, I will be invisible. I stuck out a lot at the Essex school, so being invisible basically requires me to reinvent myself, a bit like the Doctor. When the Doctor dies, he doesn't die like us. He regenerates into a different body, and the new Doctor likes different foods, and he might be a bit sillier or grumpier than the last one. I am not a Time Lord, so I can't regenerate, but I can try and do something similar. This is the rule that I have made for myself. I will only do things in my head or with my eyes, no matter how much I want to physically tap, step, or repeat. I will not talk to anyone or say anything in lessons. And maybe, if I'm really lucky, no one will notice I'm here at all.
Thank you. Thank you. That was awesome. I like how you've captured what a young boy, or I guess what a young girl too, would be thinking in class or starting a new school. You know, all the worries, the doubts that he was having, aside from OCD.
Yeah.
I think that really brings the character to life.
Thank you. I mean, I feel like anyone who's ever joined a new school will remember like just how scary that is, especially if you're going in and you feel like it is a situation where all the other kids already know each other and they've like formed their bonds and you're just thinking, ah.
Did that happen to you? Did you have to join a new school at any point?
In my life, yeah, that's actually happened a couple of times. The first time was I joined a school and I really was like one of two kids joining that year, I think. And so actually that's what happens to Ben. And it was like in the middle of the year. So that was kind of a similar experience I had to Ben. And then the second time I joined a school where actually there were already kids there, but they were taking in like a big intake of kids. So that was a bit less scary because you're like one of many.
Yeah, true. Okay, cool. And so yeah, maybe that's why it feels so real. You did talk about Ben's OCD in that initial chapter. Is there anything else you can say on the compulsions he has or any worries that he has later on in the book?
Yeah, so as the book goes on, you'll see that Ben actually has like multiple different kinds of obsessions and different kinds of compulsions that he'll do in response. Usually like the sort of common denominator is the number four. Like whatever he's doing, he will usually do it in fours. But Ben also struggles with intrusive thoughts. So he will have a thought like, what if I want my dog to die? Or what if I want something terrible to happen to my mum? And the compulsions that he'll do in response will tend to be to sort of either physically or mentally do something four times to sort of neutralize that.
Mm. Okay, cool. Thank you. And, you know, I kind of asked you there about whether you changed schools at any point. What around OCD, how much of your own experience has been put into the character Ben, do you think?
I think quite a significant amount. I guess the thing is, when I started thinking about writing another book, so it was sort of proposed to me that maybe I could just do Because We Are Bad, but like kid edition. Mm. And I was sort of like, oh, I actually just can't do that. I can't tell my story. I can't tell my story again, just because it can feel like a really vulnerable position to be in, where everyone knows exactly what happened to you and all of the crappy things. Sorry, can I swear?
Yeah, you can swear.
I guess it's not really a swear word, but as a children's author, all of the crappy things you've done in your life and things you don't feel great about. And I just didn't want to go through that level of vulnerability again. And so, but at the same time, I really wanted to do something for kids. So I was sort of thinking, how can I do that? And therefore it made sense to make another character. Ben and I do share a lot of compulsions. But for instance, Ben's number is four, whereas mine is three. Like stuff like that can create a bit of, like helps me create a bit of distance between me and the character. But the stuff with, so the book is called When I See Blue, which I mean, you probably heard in some of the extract reading, but Ben has associations with different colours. And that was definitely something I went through, like thinking that I couldn't wear a certain colour because it meant whatever. But then it's funny because I realized I hadn't even really put that in Because We Are Bad. And I think that's because it's something that happened when I was like younger. And also just because there are so many compulsions and obsessions that you could have.
Yeah.
But like, it's actually not surprising that you might miss one off. But I sort of lent into that one more for Ben.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. Because yeah, especially in the early days of this podcast, when I chatted with people, we interviewed them, they would say something like a compulsion. And I'd be like, yeah, I used to do that when I was 7, 8, 9. And I never clicked that it was OCD.
Yeah, definitely. It is amazing, isn't it? When you start to learn about OCD and talk to other people about their compulsions, just like how much of your behavior this stuff seeps into and how many things you can have been doing that you didn't even realize was OCD, but definitely was.
Yeah, of course. At the time it was bothering you, but then later on you kind of forget about it. And it's, yeah. Okay. So this book is also, I guess a key storyline in it too, is about friendship, which is obviously Ben and April. So how has friendship or relationships played a role in your kind of OCD journey?
Well, I think friendship has definitely been important to me. I mean, I would say April is quite similar to Scarlett, who's in Because We Are Bad. And that was a friend that I had growing up who was really important to me. And what was so good about her as a friend was that she was a bit no-nonsense and actually quite clever and smart and good at figuring things out. And sometimes you need someone like that when you're kind of deep in an OCD wormhole. So there's definitely overlap between the experience I had and the experience Ben has with April. And also, like, I think something that I had prior to making that friendship with Scarlett was that I hadn't really had a close friend like that who I could trust, and was definitely a bit like ostracized at my first school for just being weird and that that's when I was very little, and that was probably partly because of compulsions and partly just because of who I am as a person. So I relate to that with Ben, like feeling like you don't have a person who can help you out and root for you. And then when you meet someone who is, it's actually like a really big deal, because challenging this stuff is really scary and hard. And anyone who has OCD will know that it is, I mean, Ben describes it like having a bully in his brain, and it really is. So you need like allegiances.
Yeah, true. Yeah, I like that. And I guess my other question was, so Ben obviously is clearly struggling with OCD in a big way, but there's more going on for Ben as well, that even if he didn't have OCD, he would be struggling around, I don't want to give too much away, but like around his mom and his brother and his dad. There's lots of family stuff going on. So why write all of that into the book too, and not just have him as a young boy struggling with OCD?
I think that's a really good question. And I guess I know that it's a sort of thing that people with OCD will talk about like whether their OCD onset happened around something traumatic happening to them, whether it was triggered by a specific difficult period of their life. And I think it's really important to say, I'm sure it has been said many times on your podcast before, that obviously, well, not obviously, but that OCD does seem to sometimes just, the onset is just random and there's no real rhyme or reason. And we don't really know why that happens. Obviously there may be like genetic links. And by that, I mean, people will observe that OCD can seem like it runs in families, whether that's a genetic thing or more of a learned thing is a really interesting question. But so obviously it can just happen and happen to people who have quite stable families where there isn't lots of background stuff going on. My experience was very much that I had quite a stressful family setup. And to be honest with you, I think Ben is the same, would have probably had some OCD tendencies anyway, but that they are triggered, especially and heightened by feeling the need to protect family and that everything is chaotic, and OCD is like, then becomes like a sort of quite poor coping mechanism. Although I say poor, and like, I do think sometimes this stuff is like, it's the best thing you have at the time. Mm-hmm. It is maladaptive, obviously, but how else is a child going to feel like they have any control? Or, and so when I was going through that in my, you know, my parents didn't get on at all, and it was difficult and stressful at home. Obviously I wish I didn't have OCD. But for a child at that time, it was sort of like the best poor coping mechanism I had to handle that stuff going on around me. And I think Ben is similar in that way. Yeah. I guess I just, because I could have written, as you say, I could have written him without that stuff going on. And maybe that would have been like almost like a clearer, purer picture of just OCD. But I do think it's, one, something that's not spoken about that much is in children, poor coping mechanisms resulting from or being exacerbated by surrounding issues. And it just felt really important to me to write Ben's story in that way.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with you. I'm grateful that you added in all those other elements, because quite often we can write about OCD or talk about it and just literally it's OCD in isolation, and for some people that may be the case, as you've said, right? Maybe it's completely biological or genetic for some people, but for others, and there's studies on trauma and OCD and the percentages, and they're not small. So it does happen in your story. And if I look back at buying, there was definitely some stuff in those early days just before OCD kind of hit that I have to kind of pay attention to. And the other reason it's important to talk about trauma is, yes, I don't think it's the case for everyone, but I think it's more than we talk about. And if we're not talking about trauma and we're working on the OCD and we're not like therapizing the trauma, then we're not going to, it's going to keep driving the OCD until we've kind of worked on that.
Yeah, I think what you're saying there is really interesting. And it's probably a bit too early for Ben to go through this kind of stuff. But for me, I had a lot of CBT, which I definitely needed. Particularly at points where, like where I ended up in hospital or when I was in crisis, I really needed effective exposure response prevention. And I definitely could not have really, I think it would have been harmful to engage in therapy that was not that. Mm-hmm. But since being quite a lot better, I have engaged in therapy that is psychodynamic and person-centered. So that involves looking more at the past and things that have happened and mm-hmm. what that might mean for me. And as I said, I think I just don't think it would have been helpful for me to do that initially. But to come to at this point in my life with a kind of solid and helpful grounding in the mechanics of OCD, and it's actually been really important and helpful. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it makes sense for me that I told this story this way, basically.
Yeah, I agree. And that's interesting. And I agree, I've kind of done a similar journey, the more CBT stuff first to get the symptoms under control, then the more relational depth psychology to go a bit deeper. But if anyone that wants to do trauma work, you can do that without going deeper in the way we're saying, in the sense of EMDR. Even there's trauma protocols for acceptance and commitment therapy, compassion focused therapy, all have approaches for trauma. And so there's lots of ways of still having CBT-esque approaches, and CBT itself has a trauma protocol. So there's lots of options, but I'm really glad you added it in.
I think what you're saying is just there is really helpful too for people who like the approach I said is just the approach that personally was my own experience, but it doesn't have to be the way I suggested what you're
there's so many therapies for trauma. I guess I'll ask this, so is When I See Blue technically classified as a young adult novel?
It's actually a middle grade novel. But to be honest with you, I feel like people who don't either have kids who are super into reading or who don't work in that industry are often like not especially familiar with the difference and would just call it young adult. That was definitely me before I started writing in this way. But in general, like young adult, middle grade is like 9 to 12. Okay, whereas young adult, I think, would sort of be 12, 13 up. This would be the middle grade because it's kind of suitable for nine plus. Although, like something I've learned through now writing books for kids is that lots of adults are really into reading this these genres too, and it makes loads of sense. I now have to read lots of middle grade and young adult books just for work but it's actually like, oh yes, I can read this stuff now. I really enjoy sitting down with a middle grade book and just getting into it, which has been basically the length of an adult book just with bigger font. I'm into it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm reading obviously yours at the minute and I'm enjoying it. So it's after a while you forget who it's aimed at because you're just focused on the story. With the middle grade, why write for specifically that rough sort of 9, 10, 11 age bracket?
I mean, I have had like, it kind of depends on the emotional maturity of the child, I guess, but I've had 14, 15, 16 year olds read Because We're Bad and get on okay with it. Whereas I really felt like that Because We're Bad is not age appropriate for like a 9, 10, 11 year old. Mm. So I just really wanted to do something for them. And I don't know as to whether I'll go younger than 9. In an ideal world, I write something for every age bracket so that there is, something for everyone.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. And then I guess what do you hope readers at whatever age will get from it?
I hope that readers will learn about the experience of OCD and if they have OCD, be comforted by it, find it sort of actually helpful and empowering. If they don't, then maybe understand a bit more about people who do, but also just it's not specific to OCD really in that way. It's also about empathy. And just being a bit more open to if you see someone in your life who's doing behaviors that seem a bit off to you or that you want to just sort of label as a weirdo, being open to the fact that they might have stuff going on. I think we need more of that.
Yeah.
And Ben is kind of like an atypical hero in that he has, you know, a lot of stuff going on, but he still tries really hard to be a good friend, and he's brave in lots of ways. And I think we need more of that in books.
Yeah.
In children's books, just someone who, like, you know, maybe has a disability or has stuff going on, but nevertheless is like is not just sort of written as like a victim of all of that stuff. Can be an interesting and complex character at the same time.
Yeah, I like that. And I guess we'll move on a bit now, but are there any other questions? There's not questions. Is there anything else you wanted to say on the book?
I don't think so. I think you've been very comprehensive. It's nice to talk about it in depth like this. No, I don't think so.
Oh, all right.
Well, I don't know if we talked about this, actually. I sort of included it in the reading a bit, but he's very into Doctor Who. Mm-hmm. And that comes from me being very into Doctor Who. My lovely editor was like, I think she was like, in the pro, she was like, we need to maybe lose some of the Doctor Who. So like we refined it a bit, but there's still a hell of a lot of Doctor Who for any Whovians out there.
And of course you are in a Doctor Who t-shirt or shirt at the minute. Yeah.
But we were doing a video recording.
You can take a screenshot if you want. So if you could pick up the phone and call the 20-year-old Lily. No, let's change that. If you could pick up the phone and call the 10-year-old Lily, what would you tell her?
I'd tell her you have OCD, and then I would like explain to her what that means. I'd talk to her about intrusive thoughts and tell her that, firstly, no, not everyone thinks in this way, because I used to think that like everyone was thinking this way, but they were just somehow managing to get all the stuff in their life done. And I was like, how is that possible? So I kind of didn't realize there was anything wrong with me. But then at the same time, I would say, but some people think in this way. So that I would know that I would have friends and close people in my life at some point in the future who get what it is like to live with this thing.
Yeah. Okay, nice. Yeah, reassuring in a good way. OCD compulsive way. And then you've got a billboard, which I've asked you previously, but what do you want written on that billboard? Let's say it's in Essex, because that's where Ben is.
Oh, gosh. I should have thought about this as well, because you asked me this question last time. I ended up saying something really random. I would probably have something like, "You are not your thoughts." Mm. I know that's a bit basic, but I feel it's important.
For everyone, not just people with OCD.
Yeah.
And then lastly, anything else you wish you could have said or shared today?
Just that this is a great podcast, and I'm super happy to have been invited back, and I'm just glad this podcast exists, and thank you.
Thank you. And hopefully people check out your book, and let me know when you write the third one, and I'll put you back on. No pressure.
There's one for 5+.
Yeah. Do one with just loads of pictures and a few words.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Lily. It's been great talking to you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this week's podcast. If you enjoy the OCD Stories podcast and would like to support us with a one-time tip/donation, please go to theocdstories.com/support. All tips, no matter how large or small, are greatly appreciated. Please subscribe and rate the show wherever you listen to the podcast. And thank you to NoCD for supporting our work. And if you want to find out more about NoCD, head to go.treatmyocd.com/theocdstories or click the link in the episode description. And quick disclaimer, guys, this podcast is not therapy. It is not a replacement for therapy. Please seek treatment from a trained professional. And until we speak, take care.